Tomorrow you'll have some time in your hands. Spend some time in Kibbutz Avim. You spend some time learning Torah. Tomorrow, if you want, you can take a look at a famous Ramban, which we're not going to look at now. And that is Ramban about Shechem. Ramban is a very fascinating discussion about what was the basis for the way Shimon and Levi respond to Shechem. And he has an interesting discussion about how you define the Shevet Mitzvah Bnei Noach, and whether they were in play or not in play, how they were in play. But that, if you want to take a look at tomorrow, that's a Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel, in the Ramban al Torah, his approach to the story of Shechem. I wanted to turn our attention now, today, to the very beginning of the parsha. We noticed when we began to learn Ramban this year that one of the things that's unique about the Ramban, and it's demonstrative of a certain bent of mind, is that Ramban doesn't only write pasuk by pasuk, he also has hakdamas to each of the svar. He has an eye, a very strong eye towards what is the bigger picture, meaning what's the coherence, what's Bereishis about as a whole. And we've seen repeatedly, and we're about to see again, his take on what's Bereishis about as a whole, and how does that apply to specific psukim. Every once in a while, he'll even have an introduction to a chunk of a sefer, to a parsha. And here's one of those times where it happens, the very beginning of parsha Yishlach, before he gets to Pasuk Dalet, he starts with an intro. Nichtava parsha azos lehudia ki hitzil HaKadosh Baruch Hu's avdo uga'ol minyad chazak imen. Why was this parsha written? So many details in the opening of a Yishlach about how Yaakov Avinu is interacting with Esav before and while he meets him. So many details. So who needs it? What's the seen in the past? And why is it in the Nevuah Shehutzra Chol Daros? It says, number one, ki hitzil HaKadosh Baruch Hu es avdo uga'ol miyad chazak imenu. It's an example of HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking care of his avid, of saving him yad chazak mimenu. That's the language that's familiar to us from davening, from Birkas Kriyat Shema, right? Uga'ol miyad chazak mimenu. The end of Gal Yisrael. The footnote, he tells you that the language of that bracha is built on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. It's also familiar, not that exact language, but when you think Rabban Biyad Miatim, Tamein Biyad Tahorim, etc., 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 that's the cast and the model of this pasuk in Yirmiyahu. And the first time we see it is Yaakov Avinu. This is the original Yochalosh Biyad Gibor. Uga'alo Biyad Chazek Imenu. So that's number one. You have a sketch of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saving his Eved from a far more powerful opponent. No, we're not talking about Shechem now. Oh. This is Yaakov and Esav.
Oh.
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. You should take a look at the Ramban about Shechem. Lamed Dal Yud Gimel. A. But now we're going to focus on some couple of passages around Ramban at the beginning of the parasha with Yaakov and Esav. It says, what's the point of this? What's the point of telling us the details? And number one, you get a sense of the strength of Esav's forces. You get a sense of the vulnerability of Yaakov in his camp, and a sense of precariousness that Yaakov clearly felt. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves him. Vayishlach malach vayitzilehu. Ulam deinu. Oh, the Rabban says, and to teach you a second lesson. Shehulo batach b'tzidkaso, that Yaakov is not relying on his tzidkas, that he's such a wonderful tzaddik that he's going to be saved. V'hishtadel b'hatzal b'chal yichalto, and he's being mishtahidu in his shadlus. He's working on putting things in place to save himself b'chal yichalto to his full capacity. In other words, two lessons: one about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and one about people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, and he doesn't say but, and an additional lesson, we would have said but, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, but we should do his shadlus. Now, Baruch Hu has an and. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, ulam deinu od, number two, you should do his shadlus. You should do his shadlus. And his shadlus, every word of the Rabban is golden. His shadel b'hatzal b'chol yecholto, with his full capacity. What does that mean? With his full capacity. What's Ramban driving at in the Pesukim? He's summarizing the Pesukim for us. He's giving us a praises of the Pesukim. I mean, but with full capacity. How do you see it's full capacity? Right, so now he does lots of different things. Number two, even just think about the gifts that he sends. He doesn't just send him a nice tie. He doesn't just send him, we were learning about Yitzhak, here are seven sheep. This is massive. This is astronomical number of animals are being sent. And as Rashi points out to us, the Psukim say, Rashi highlights that the Psukim stress, Revach Tosimu ben Eder le'Eder. He didn't even just send one mass gift. He sent them in separate truckloads. He sends one, he sends another, there's a tremendous amount invested of time and of resources. Correct. He was sending plenty already. He was sending a pretty sizable gift. And B'chol Yechalto means he even thought about how can I multiply the impact even further. So let me send, probably could have sent fewer staff if he was just sending it in one mass amount. But once you're sending separate shipments, each shipment has to have its own staffing. And there's going to be more time involved. There's a lot. This is a major production. That's what he says. He wasn't just trying to do minimal hashtalos just to be able to check the box. I did my hashtalos. Yaakov is really invested in making this work. And those are two lessons. You look at this story, and you see that Kadosh Baruch takes care of us, and you see that Kadosh Baruch expects us to take care of ourselves, and to take care of ourselves vigorously. Yeah. Question. Okay, that's the Shabbos. He didn't want to get killed. And let's define our terms. His Shabbos means, Leshadel means to work at it. So he didn't say, I'm just going to sit back, Kadosh Baruch will take care of me. Kadosh Baruch was business to take care of me, but Kadosh Baruch gave me my business to take care of it, to work on taking care of myself. It's his Shabbos, it's working at it. Because ultimate results are HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but efforts are on us. So he put in full effort into saving himself. Hishtadlus doesn't have to mean to make money. Often you hear about the term Hishtadlus in the context of Parnasa. But Hishtadlus means working at addressing whatever your physical and material needs are. In this case, his material needs were survival. So he worked at it. He didn't just sit back and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me. Right. As opposed to saying, I'm scared, but HaKadosh Baruch will take care of me, so I'll just do my thing.
I mean, that's like, oh, Hashem's going to help me, so I'm going to do my hashtalos and bring gifts.
I'm not understanding. Hit me again. Never mind. You want to think about reforming? Okay. I would love to understand what your kasha is. Yeah. Gansh.
I thought we say in general that you're only supposed to do so much hashtalos and then let Hashem.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Right? He's not, Rabban is highlighting that Yaakov is not doing a very minimal just to check the boxes. So how do you know where to draw the line? How much Hishtadlus is too much Hishtadlus? Yosef HaTzadik, for instance, is critiqued for having reached out to the Saramashkim. And Saramashkim is being released from prisons. He says, keep me in mind. And for that, Chazal say that he's punished. He ends up in prison longer because he reached out. He should have been boteach more. So apparently there's a limit. So one of the ideas that Rambah, the Chazon Ish develops, Chazon Ish, we have 5.5 prakim of a very intriguing Hashkafa work by the Chazon Ish. It was originally published actually in the back of the Chazon Ish's volume on Taras, and since then it's been published numerous times as a separate standalone volume under the title Emunah Bitachon, because the first paragraph is about Emunah, second paragraph is about Bitachon, and the other paragraph about the interrelationship of Halacha and Musar. A lot of interesting, very, very insightful, sometimes somewhat iconoclastic ideas. So when he talks about Bitachon, it's a short parak, very, very, very powerful parak about Bitachon. He defines what Bitachon is, what Bitachon isn't. Maybe some other time we should talk about that. The urban legend of what Bitachon is versus what Bitachon actually is, that's how he opens. And then near the end he says, so, what's what's appropriate ishtalos, what's inappropriate ishtalos. He says, well, it really is a question of, is this a reasonable, prudent thing to do? Or are you doing things that don't really have, rationally speaking, much chance of success? You're just grasping at straws out of despair. I guess it does go back to his core definition of bitachon. He points out lots of times, this is very important, this is a very, very important idea. He says, the urban legend is that, you know, to have bitachon means you should have bitachon that things will work out the way you want them to. Right? That's what the stereotypical Bubby says, have bitachon that you'll pass the test. Right? Fellows undergoing surgery, have bitachon that it'll be okay. Have bitachon that the surgery will be successful. Have bitachon you pass the test. Have bitachon that that you'll date the girl you want to date. Have bitachon that you'll get into the graduate program I get into, get into the yeshiva I get into, whatever it is. Here's the problem, Chaznish points out. There are two problems with that. We've all heard that before. Have bitachon that X, Y, Z will happen. Problem number one is that if that's your bitachon, then it is false. Because often the thing we want to happen doesn't happen. Often the thing we don't want to happen does happen. Not everyone passes every test he takes. Not every surgery ends the way the patient is hoping it will end. You don't always marry the girl you want to marry. You don't always get into the graduate program you want to get into. Sometimes stuff works out the way you want to. Sometimes stuff works out not the way you want to. So if bitachon means things will invariably work out as you wish them to, then number one, that's false. It's demonstrably, empirically false. That's not a true religion. A. B, there's no reason why it should be true. Why would you think that whatever you want to happen would happen? I'm not God. You're not God. We're not control the world. So why would you think? Chaznir says what bitachon actually is something subtly, but importantly, different, and something which once you let it settle, once you let the idea settle, you realize it actually is far more calming and satisfying than the false notion of bitachon. Because what bitachon really means is not the belief that whatever I want to happen will happen, but it's the belief that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to happen will happen. Meaning that life is not random. Life is not just stochastic, chaotic randomness. Blind fate will have what it has. No. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu maintains interest in the universe, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is engaged in my life. And that life isn't just random. We also believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about us. I called my Dav Rachman Lotav of it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes decisions that are ultimately in our best interest. It may not be in our short-term best interest, but it's in our long-term best interest. But the difference between short-term and long-term comes up in life all the time. Right, going into a cold pool. So it's always easier in the short term to not jump in. It's going toe at a time. Right? For the Maisa, if you jump in, anticipation is hard, but once you're in, you're in. In the long term, you're happier that you didn't spend 15 minutes going in toe by toe into the pool, you just jumped in. And it's like that way, that's a muscle for lots of life. Lots of times in our own decisions, you know, short term and long term are at odds. Kadosh Baruch Hu is mature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not immature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fully values the long term over the short term. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in our long term good, often more than we are. So bitachon doesn't mean that the thing I want to happen will happen. Bitachon does mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is driving the truck. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is driving the bus, and that he's overseeing the overall trajectory. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to happen will happen. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us, as Ramban points out here, to not be passive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be active vectors, agents. We should have a sense of agency in our own destiny, with an awareness of the fact that efforts are on us and results are on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a healthy blend of bitachon and shalos. So Chaznish writes, so to do things which are reasonable and prudent, to the sort of things that, rationally speaking, are a good idea, a good way to address this issue, that's proper. Hishtadlus. Once I'm just like grasping at straws, just doing anything, it doesn't really even make so much sense. At that point, you're just acting out of despair. So that's a lack of bitachon. Despair means like all hope is lost. That bespeaks a lack of bitachon. So that's why the Chazon Ish develops the idea that politically speaking, there was very little, there was almost no chance that the Sar Mashkim would, B'derech HaTava, take care of Yosef once he's gone. Once Sar Mashkim is back to his position, Yosef is still stuck in jail, the bottom of the social totem pole. B'derech HaTava, it's never going to help. So what are you even bothering for? It's grasping at straws. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. They said, yeah, so that's the lack of Bahir. These are all reasonable things. As it goes on to say, Yesh ba'od remez ledoros. Not only is it a picture of Yaakov as a model, but it also was remez ledoros. This is what the Ramban said to us time and again. Ma'isa avasim lebanim. And the avos were acting out, the episodes in their lives, specifically those episodes in their lives which are recorded in Sefer Bereishis, were also nevuos for Jewish history to come. He called Asher Era La Avinu im Esav Achiv Yera Lanu Tamid im Bnei Esav. That Yaakov's interaction with Esav was a prototype, an archetype, for the Jewish people's interactions throughout the Doros with the descendants of Esav. V'roi Lanu Lechos B'Darkei Tzadik. We should take that approach. Shenaz Min Atzmein L'Shloshes Hadvarim Shehizmin Huvas Atzmo. We should make the same three aspects of his shadlus that he did. He already told us about making the shtadlus. Now he talks about specifically about a diversification of methods. Tfila, Doron, and Hatzala Kederach Melchama. In other words, the spiritual preparation, the tfila, and then the physical, material preparation is both peace and war, both diplomacy and the military. He talks about right away. Levroach Lehin Hatzel. That's because for many, many centuries, Klal Yisrael's only military-like response was to run. We didn't have the capacity to stand and fight because we didn't have an army. We didn't have a sovereign nation. But now, Baruch Hashem, B'chazdei Hashem, it's incredibly tragic that it's necessary, but B'chazdei Hashem, when it's necessary, we have the ability to stand and fight as well. And flight, we have the choice between fight and flight. Both aspects of what the Ramban sees is under the rubric of Milchama. In the next piece, Ramban talks about the fact that Chazal critique Yaakov for being overly proactive and in an obsequious way. Unwise, imprudent, his shalos. He didn't have to, he was going south, as Ramban points out. He's coming from the north, or from the northeast, from Haran, and he's headed south because he's going to the Negev. His father lives in Beersheba, as the son Ira Avos. Yitzhak is in Beersheba, or somewhere around Beersheba. Yaakov is headed to Beersheba. Head to Beersheba, you're going to pass near Edom, because Edom is what we would call southern Jordan. So he's going to pass nearby, but he doesn't have to go through. So he could have tried to just maintain a low profile. Instead, he reaches out in a very obsequious way. He says, you see that with the Chashmonaim as well, Ramban writes. They reached out, they debased themselves before the Romans. Unless they made themselves into a doormat in their relationship with the Romans, and it did not end well. To have national spine, to have national backbone, that's one of the lessons of Parsha Vayishlach. And maybe let's end with the Ramban Pasuk test. But yeah, Machan Anishal, on the next page, Machan Anishal of Fleta test. Pasuk test. Adarcha Pshat Amar Zeh Be'ulai. Yaakov Avinu says, I will divide the camp into two sub-camps. Two groups in two different locations. So Yom HaEsav, the Esav will come and attack one camp, the other camp will be safe. Hayamacha Nisha Lifleta. Pshudosh al-Mikra, there's something missing. What's missing is a question mark. What's missing is a maybe. If Esav attacks one camp, the other camp will definitely be saved. I mean, maybe they'll be saved. There are better chances of being saved. So he said, Derech HaPshad Amar Zeh Be'ulai. At first blush, if you read Pshudosh al-Mikra, it looks like this is really meant as a possibility. Ulay, you know, tell machna echad. Maybe one machna will survive. Why? Keep hakoso echad. either yivruchu achim or toshuv chamasam. O tavol lehem atzal me'es Hashem. When he attacks one, number one, it gives the others more lead time to escape. Number two, maybe Tashuv Chamaso. Maybe Esav's, his anger will run its course. And if he doesn't see the rest of them right away, he'll calm down and move on. Or maybe they'll be saved because it's an opportunity. It creates more space for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save them. Again, there too, interesting interplay of the Bitachon and Hashtagos. Or what we've seen in the past about creating a kli for Berachas Hashem to be chala. I'm going to do my part, so somehow more b'derech hatava than HaKadosh Baruch Hu could save us. And he says, and the Brachas Rabbah says, "Limdascha Torah derech eretz leyaniach adam kol mamonu b'zavas achas." How about that? We're familiar with that as an English expression, not to put all your eggs in one basket. Right? One of the basic rules of investing, whether investing money or anything else. You don't, even if you think that the Uber is the most promising stock on the market, one could definitely take issue with that. Even if you thought, let's say, a couple of months ago, the Uber was the most promising stock on the market, you don't invest all of your cash in Uber. You don't even invest 80% of your cash in Uber. That's really foolish. You can invest a chunk. You want to diversify your investments. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So that's the Bereishis Rabbah that we learned from Yaakov Avinu. Don't put all your money in one corner. Don't invest all your money in one. Rashi says, it's more than that. Hayamacha initial lafleta, and the instance of Ramban is giving us very subtly, giving us an appreciation of the kasha that Rashi didn't ask, but clearly was responding to. Al karcho, it's certainly going to be saved. Ki elachimimo, because I'm going to fight with him. How do you know? Hiskinas mol shol shadvarim tefila don milchama. In other words, as Rav Shavel points out on the bottom, Rashi quotes from Chazal that Yaakov had this three-pronged response. Where do you see anything about Milchama? We say about Milchama. We see the Doron, we hear the Tefillah. Where does he see anything about fighting? So Pinnas to Machana. So he says, what does that have to do with Milchama? So strategic. So you could have said, now earlier, the first Ramban said, like, name Milchama just means the sorts of physical approaches you would have to war, which might include running away. The Ramban is saying, but it's more than that. There's an implication here of battle. Where's the implication that Yaakov is ready, is prepared proactively for military conflict, for military engagement? Because he says, this problem, this Pshutshal Mikra issue, where's the Ulai? What do you mean? They'll be saved. And maybe they'll be saved. There's slightly greater chances they'll be saved. But why are you so convinced? The answer is, I'm convinced because I'm prepared to fight. And he goes on to say, the Medrash says, Me'asa, zina mi bifnim. It's a very visual, it's a very powerful visual. Zina mi bifnim, v'helbisham begadim levana mi bachutz. What Yaakov did, the Medrash describes, is he armed his family and his group underneath, and they put on formal clothing, begadim levanim, beautiful formal clothing on top. They were in their Shabbos finest, and underneath they weren't being overt about their military preparedness. They weren't wearing it on their sleeve. They weren't they weren't belligerent. They came looking diplomatic, but they were prepared. Underneath the business suit was the holster. If it's going to cut, they weren't looking for war. They were looking for diplomacy. That was the preferred alternative, the Doron. And they came and begat them Levanim. But if need be, they were prepared. The Hiskin Asmo, the Brisa says, the Medrash says, L'shol Shadvarim. V'chein Iker. That's the most compelling understanding of the pasuk. That doesn't mean ulai. He's speaking with confidence because they had a diplomatic approach and they had a backstop, they had a last resort of a military approach, and they were prepared for both. He had a preference, obviously, for diplomacy, but if need be, he's prepared for military engagement also. And then he goes on to say, Kavana b'zek Yaakov yodeh she'ein zaro kulo nofel b'yad Esav. Yaakov knew that the entire Klal Yisrael are not going to be destroyed. So he had confidence that if it came to that, military engagement would be successful. It says here too is that second layer of Ma'aseh Avos Tzimin Labanim. And what's the larger archetypal message of this pasuk? That throughout Jewish history there have been many groups who want to do us in, and many groups succeeded at doing us in partially. Yasurosim kitzasenu. The kitzasar atzoshla. And it's also often a question of geography. Okay, with the Jews in one area were suffering, and the Jews in one area may have been decimated. But the Jews elsewhere survived. Melech echad mehem gozer ba'artzal memonenu, al gufenu. In one country, the king, the government, is gozer to impoverish us, or to kill us, even worse. In a different country, opens its doors, and will save the refugees. And Bereshit Rabbah says, Esav will come to the one camp and attack, and that's a reference to the Jews living in the south at the time that the Medrash Rabbah is written. Then the Jews in Galus will be saved. And that's probably a reference to Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. Eretz Yisrael, for much of the Tkufas HaTalmud, was a part of the Roman Empire, while Bavel was part of the Persian Empire. And for the reason why Talmud Yerushalmi is so short and not well learned, because Talmud Yerushalmi ended after just a few generations, because the Romans finally succeeded in entirely eliminating Smicha and Eretz Yisrael. That's why we have a fixed calendar. And that's why the Talmud Yerushalmi was cut short. While in Bavel, they had the Yeshiva in Pumbedisa, the Yeshiva in Fallujah, is historically probably the longest running Yeshiva anywhere at any point in Jewish history. Pumbedisa is already a fully functioning, high-level, world-class Yeshiva by the 300s, and it's still going strong throughout the Tkufas HaGaonim, into at least the year 1000, it's one of the preeminent yeshivas in the world. And even days of the Rambam, the late 1100s, 1200s, it was no longer a preeminent yeshiva, but it was certainly a functioning yeshiva. That's a good 700-800 years in Bavel, because the Kalal Yisrael were much safer, much more comfortable. It was a different regime that treated them very differently. Achin Shabagola were lefleita. Ru'u ki gamu daros termozos ha'parsha. Rabban says, the Bereishis Rabbah applies the pasuk from Yaakov and Esav to their time, and Rabban says, I recognize it applies in our time as well. And Rabban lived through running from place to place. And there were countries that were very cruel to the Jews, and there were other places where the Jews could survive and thrive. This pasuk, yeah, there's a parallel pasuk. The Har Tzion Tia Pleita is, it's said that the Chafetz Chaim died between the two world wars. And before he passed away, he had been telling people around him for a while that he has a sense that there's something horrific, there was something unprecedented is coming. And I don't remember if Yosef Kahneman was there and actually asked him, or others asked him, and it got repeated through Yosef Kahneman. It could be Yosef Kahneman himself. Panav Rav says, the Rebbe, so what's the solution? They call the pasuk, I think it's pasuk in Zechariah, the Har Tzion Tia Pleita. That the survivors will be in Har Tzion. And that pasuk is, if you go to the Panav Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, that's the pasuk across the front door. That's what motivated the Panav Rav to make it to Eretz Yisrael, to establish a yeshiva. He established, I believe, if I remember correctly, Panav was begun. Certainly the construction began, I think, before 48, before the Mechemet HaShechur. And people thought he was crazy. He said, like, he points to this sand dune not far from the old city of Yafo and this young growing city of Tel Aviv, and he says, I'm going to build, he had come from Panavish, I'm going to rebuild the Panav Yeshiva on that sand dune. And people thought that he was a pie in the sky. It would be lucky if we survived. They all knew that war was coming with the Arabs. Like, we're lucky if we survived building a yeshiva. Like, he said, no. Chafetz Chaim said, the Navi Zechariah says, that's the story of Jewish survival. And Jewish thriving. That's Vaya Macha Nishal Afleta. That's what Rabban says. These are messages, these are lessons. These are lessons for all generations. And this is a part of the perspective with which a Jew learns Chumash in general and Parsha Yishlach in particular.